First One Out presents The People vs. Extinction, a Survivor Season 38 cast preview, hosted by me, Josh Wigler, and brought to you in collaboration with The Hollywood Reporter and Rob Has a Podcast. Chapter 2, Good Enough to Smack Your Comma. Survivor, Season 38, Day 2. The noise you're hearing right now is not an electric didgeridoo purring outside of Tribal Council, but it is a generator, roaring in the Fijian wilderness, about a 3-minute walk from the Kama camp. It powers the small camera commune belonging to the courageous crew tasked with filming the players 24/7, a tented space loaded with electronics, bug spray, sunscreen, snacks, all the fixings. Maybe even a cooler filled with iced coffee, a homemade treat that's basically the holy grail of Survivor location beverages. I bring you this noise because it serves as a reminder, an audio monument to all of the luxuries the survivors won't be using in the weeks ahead, all just a short jungle trek away from the place they call home, at least during this opening stretch of the game. A short hike away from the camera tent, the Kama Tribe, headlined by Joe Anglim and Aubrey Bracco, and with a bunch of new Survivor hopefuls as well. Here's the lineup. Eric Hafeman, a firefighter and father of two from Chicago, entering the game with specific rules of engagement on the mind. Ron Clark, who you might know from his groundbreaking work at the Ron Clark Academy in Georgia and the Matthew Perry movie it inspired. Victoria Beaumont, a sharp young mind from the Bronx who will happily tell you how to get cast on Survivor. Aurora McCreary, an attorney from Florida who means what she says and says what she means, and knows that sometimes it means coming across as, well, mean. Gavin Whitson of Tennessee, a longtime Survivor fan with an incredible story about his newlywed status. Julia Carter, yet another longtime fan, who's hitting the Survivor Trail now before she launches into a very different all-consuming adventure. And finally, Julie Rosenberg, a New York City Etsy shop owner who looks so familiar to me. And it takes me a while to figure it out. I can't quite place it. At least, not until I arrive at the Kama camp, where Joe is doing his Joe thing, leading the shelter building effort, and Aubrey is doing her Aubrey thing, engaging in deep talks with other members of the tribe, including Julie, sitting right next to Aubrey, and looking like the spitting image of a future sent Michelle Fitzgerald. Julie as a time-traveling Michelle Fitzgerald is a weird take, that's for sure. Then again, this is a weird season, isn't it? Anyway, enough of the foo thing from me. Let's move on to what you're here for. Conversations with the members of Kama, presented in the order in which they occurred. With the exception of Julie, who I spoke to last. But since we're on the subject, and since I do love time travel... Chapter 2, Part 1. Business on the Side.
We're good. We're good to go. Julie, right? Absolutely. All right, have a seat. How are you feeling?
I feel like the chair is stuck in
Oh, well, that has been happening all day.
Okay.
Yeah, feel free.
Okay. I can move it, right?
Like, it was, whatever like,
really,
works for you.
There's like, really sunken in there.
We're off camera, so...
Okay, oh, good. So this is
just get comfortable.
Audio?
Yeah,
okay.
Audio only. So how are you doing? How
I'm
are you
good.
Feeling?
I'm good. Very excited.
This
like,
is crazy,
so ready
huh?
for this to start.
Yeah.
Very crazy.
So one thing to note is just,
oh, right.
you touch the table too much?
You're not the first person that's told me
Oh, okay,
that.
There
I
we
obviously
go.
Do that with my hand. I was slapping my
I do it myself, honestly, and I'm supposed to be tracking.
All right, I'm going to keep my hands folded in my
Totally. Okay. So tell me about yourself. Who are you and what are you doing out here?
So I'm Julie Rosenberg, and I'm 46 years old from New York City. And I'm here because I'm basically following a dream that started 18 years ago from the minute I saw the first episode of season one, like, I knew I wanted to play Survivor. And I actually applied 17 years ago, back in 2001.
Oh, wow.
And I got close to getting on, but not close enough, obviously. And then I took a break from applying for a long time. I got married, I had kids, and about 4 years ago, I started applying again.
Okay. And so what was it about Survivor when you watched it that first time? You were like, yeah, need that.
I know. Right. Nobody can understand why I ever wanted to do this. I don't even know why I'm staring at that thing.
It's very easy to look at.
It's like a big, it looks like one of those...
troll dolls?
Yes. You've heard that before. Okay.
I've heard a lot of things.
Right. Oh, yeah. Okay. So... I just was fascinated with it. Like, and I can't even explain why. It's very hard for me to put it in words because so many people think it's, like, torture and not anything fun. But for me, it was, like, every aspect of the game. The challenges and the competitive aspect. What you put yourself physically through. The mental, you know, strategies that have to go on through your head. Just every element of it.
Yeah, so you watched it when it first came out. You applied that one time, and then you didn't apply again until about four years ago, you said?
4 years ago, okay, I started applying again because that was the age that my kids started watching the show with me. They were old enough, and they were interested,
cool.
And they started watching it. And then we binge-watched all the old seasons. So I've seen every season more than once, and they were so into it, like, all of a sudden, I was like, wait a minute, like, how cool would it be for their mom to be on Survivor, and now they're old enough that I could actually leave them for that amount of time.
Yeah.
So
are they excited about this?
They're super excited. Like, I mean, I hope they're super excited. They acted like they were, so we'll see how
long. Is there any part of them where they were like, Mom, really?
No. I think when I was leaving about two nights before I left, I kept saying to them, like, are you sure you're okay? You're going to be okay without me? And my daughter was like, oh, yeah, Mom, we're good. Go. Like, it'll be great without you. And my son was the total opposite, where he was like, Mommy, I'm going to miss you. And it's, you know, so they're excited, but I'm sure there's an element of... whatever the word is.
Yeah,
I don't know. Help me out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Definitely. So you're on now all these years after Borneo. We're a long way from Borneo.
Yes,
like,
yes.
The game is very far away from where it started out.
Yeah.
How do you feel about your shot here in, like, this era of Survivor?
I feel like I have a good shot. I mean, I do feel like I'm in a good place in my life in terms of being able to handle the challenges. I've been working out quite a bit,
cool.
Preparing for them. And socially, I do feel like I'm going to be able to make connections with people. I'm pretty likable. I feel like I'm funny. Like, I'm not somebody who's very aggressive and in your face. I don't think I'm going to piss anybody off.
Yeah. So in terms of entering this season... do you have a game plan? Like, is there something in mind as you're walking in?
Everybody keeps asking that. I really don't have a game plan, and I don't know if that's, like, the worst answer or the best answer, because...
I don't think it's a terrible answer at all.
I just feel like I...
Survivor's very flexible.
Right. That's what I feel like. There's so many variables in this game, and you never know what's going to happen. Like, Jeff throws a twist at you at any moment, and then, like, your whole game blows up. So, trying to plan too much in advance, I feel like... isn't even worth it. Although that's the complete opposite of how I am in my real life. In my real life, like, I plan everything to
death. A T.
Yeah, so maybe that's why I've taken this other approach, and I'm going to see how it works for me.
Tell me about your life outside of Survivor. So what do you do? What's that all about?
So, like I said, I live in New York City. I'm married. I have two kids. I was a stay-at-home mom for a while, and I still am, but I started a business a couple years ago where I make and design eco-friendly wooden toys that sell online. And it's something that lets me be creative, but at the same time, it has, like, a little bit of an entrepreneurial, you know, aspect to it. And I get to do it from home so that I can still be the mom and take my kids to school and pick them up when they, you know, get out and all that.
What kind of toys do you make?
First of all, I'm not the carpenter.
Okay.
I don't actually
cut. But you help with the design.
I don't cut the wood. What I do is I have a supplier, and I order the toys from him, and then I design them in terms of more like stylizing them and putting them together in sets and making groupings, or just painting them with these, like, non-toxic paints, and then I made an organic, like, sealant of, like, it's a homemade organic sealant that I finish them with, and then I... photograph and sell them.
Nice. And so what made you want to do that, like, specifically, that being your business model?
I don't No, if there, it's never like I had some calling, but I think the fact that I used to be a teacher, like in another lifetime,
oh, cool.
a long time ago. So I was, my experience being a classroom teacher and also obviously being a parent, like it just felt like the right fit for me to do something that was child related, that had this creative feel to it where, you know, I could do some creative stuff and, also, like, have a little business on the side.
Totally. Awesome. So you've been watching Survivor all of these seasons.
Yes. Except one. I think there's one I missed.
Do you know which one it was?
Maybe Nicaragua.
You didn't miss much.
Everyone says that. Everyone says that.
I think it's actually, like, lightly underrated, but to the point that it's so lightly underrated that it's now become lightly overrated.
Oh,
if that makes sense.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Yeah,
anyway,
that totally makes sense.
So do you have a favorite season? Do you have favorite players? Like, anybody who's kind of, like, play style you wanna channel out here?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I loved Cagayan. I thought that was a great season. Just so many great characters. Like, the cast members were
that
amazing.
That cast was spectacular.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
And I also love Heroes versus Villains. That to me is like a classic. I know it's like a returning player season, but again, like the gameplay in that was unbelievable. The challenges were brutal. Like when I think about the injuries that happened even on day one with like her dislocated shoulder, like it was intense, but it was definitely fun to watch. In terms of like Survivor that I want, what Survivor I want to channel out here, I mean,
like if everything goes well, like in your mind, like if you are the person at the end on day 39,
yeah,
is there like a play style that would be like similar, like a similar comparison, you think?
I think I'm probably similar to Suri in terms of her social game and being able to make those connections and socialize. I'm not going to be probably the challenge beast. I mean, I feel like I'm athletic, but I'm also maybe one of the oldest people out here.
Okay.
So that kind of worries me a little bit. So I do think I have to rely more on my social skills than anything else.
Yeah. Are you willing to be pretty cutthroat in the way that Suri was? Like, is that the type of game that you're looking to play?
I mean, I don't feel like a cutthroat person, but I'm not here to lose, and I'm not going to not do something if it's going to jeopardize me staying in the game.
Yeah. So one of the things that's changed since the, you know, it's a very recent change, this fire making challenge that's shown up in the last couple of seasons. Is that something you've taken into account? Is it something you've prepared for, practiced
for? Oh, yeah. I ordered flint on Amazon, and I had like five different kinds, and I got them, and I started practicing making fire months ago, and I definitely have it down. I'm very confident in my fire making skills.
Man, somebody's got to show me how to do it one of these
days.
I've tried.
What's your problem?
My problem is I'm an idiot.
Okay, all right.
And I think that's incurable.
Okay, well, I can't help you there.
Absolutely.
Chapter 2, Part 2, Swing Away.
How's it going? How are ya?
The Wiggle Room.
That's me.
What's up, man?
Who are you?
I'm Eric Haithman.
Eric.
How you doing, buddy?
Nice to meet you, man.
How are you?
Welcome to Survivor. How are you?
Awesome.
Papa Squat, awesome. This is for you.
I've heard your podcast.
Oh, my God.
A little bit. No matter.
Okay, no, that's all right.
A little bit.
Tiny bit is better than some.
How you doing, buddy?
You know, I'm doing well. How are you, man?
Killer.
This is exciting, huh?
Yeah, this is insane.
Is this crazy?
Yeah, it is.
Big Survivor guy?
You know, yeah, I kind of am. I mean, I'm definitely a fan. I've seen probably all of it.
Yeah.
But I've been wanting to be on the show forever.
How long? Like, how long have you been, like, actively trying to get on the show? Like, did you apply a bunch over the years?
Yes. I applied immediately after college, like, 3 or 4 times, like, in the VHS days. And I got one phone call from a producer the very first time I applied. And I was like, I thought instantly I was going to be on the show.
That's how it works, right? One call, you're out.
I celebrated. I'm going to be a Survivor. And then it was like, and then I applied the next year, nothing. The next year, whatever, nothing. And then I was like, man, screw this. You know? But I stopped applying for like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years. Got married, had some kids, decided I'd start applying again, and here I am.
Sometimes you just need to grow your story so that they will, you know, latch onto you.
Yeah.
And, you know, see something new.
I guess.
What do you think it is that they saw in you that they're bringing you out for this?
I don't know. I think probably the numbers are a little smaller, the competition, the older you get. I imagine, like,
how old are you?
I'm 35.
Okay.
So, I mean, when I first started applying, I was like 24.
Yeah.
You know, when it'd be pretty easy, pretty convenient to come out, you know?
Right.
Not a lot of conflicts when you're 24.
You can do it.
Basically,
job. Devil may care, yeah.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Like, you know, entry-level job. You don't even have to ask for time off. But, you know, I think, I don't know, I think maybe just some life experience. I've got kids, family, that kind of thing. So, lots changed. I don't know.
What do you do?
I'm a firefighter.
Okay. How'd you get into that? Was that something you always wanted to do?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, I grew up in Chicago, and for whatever reason, it was just never on my radar at all. I knew a couple guys whose, like, dads and uncles and were firefighters, so they kind of went into the family trade, but I never even considered it. And then I got married, and I met a girl in college, stayed in California. I went to school in California and then stayed here, and then her dad was a fire captain, and I just started getting exposure to it, and the more I saw, the more I wanted to do it, and just sort of went for it.
So how long have you been doing that now?
Well, it's kind of a long process, but I've worked for a few different, like I started as a reserve or volunteer, and then I got my first full-time job, and then about 4 years ago, I switched departments. So total, probably like 9 years or so.
Okay.
So...
And you like it?
Since I first started, yeah. Yeah, I love it, man. It's the best.
Tell me about, like, what's a day in the life?
It's the best job ever.
Yeah.
It's the best job ever. Day in the life? We drink a lot of coffee.
You gotta be awake. It's important.
Yeah, we drink a lot of coffee.
Because you're up for, like, hours at a time, right?
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, we... Depends on where you work, of course. Some stations and engines are busier than others. We run a lot of night calls where I work, so we're up a lot. But, it's cliche, but it really is like a second family, you know. It's a bunch of brothers and sisters working together, and you grow to love the people you work with, and it's great, man. You go to work with your buddies, pretty much,
yeah.
You know. And, you know, above and beyond all that, being incredibly fun, is you really get to help people, so... I think that's why deep down we're all in it.
Yeah.
You get to do something you think counts and feel good at the end of the day, you know?
So that's your second family. Tell me about your first family.
Yeah. My first family is the best. They're the best. My wife's name is Lindsay, and we've been married for 11 years.
Nice.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
thanks.
Man. That's great.
Yeah, we were pups when we got married. We met in college, and we graduated in May, and we got married in July. And I started my first job in June. So we got after right away.
Shot out of a cannon.
That's
just
right.
Getting into life.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Why wait? Yeah, I guess, I don't know. You know, maybe.
Yeah, or, I'm or married not. To my college sweetheart.
Yeah.
I get it. So,
yeah, there you go.
Totally.
And at the time, I came out from Chicago. And so approaching graduation, it's like, what am I going to do? You know, if I move home, she's a California girl. Can't lose the girl, you know. Lock her down now. So that's what I did. And we have two sons. I have a 4-year-old whose name's Levi, and he's the coolest. And then we have a 14-month-old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, or 15-month-old now, maybe. 14-month-old. And his name's Jack. And he is an extremely overweight, happy little boy.
The best kind.
He's the best. He is the funniest kid. They're both the best, but yeah, I feel very lucky. I'm a lucky man, so I think I feel coming into this experience at least. I've already won, you know. I feel like I already have won the jackpot.
Yeah.
At home, so I feel like I can really play free. I feel like there's a danger in wanting it too much, or you know, feeling like you have to have it or you have to win. Like, I need this. I can't mess it up. I think that just, like, it's like, you know, playing cards or something.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't lose what's on the table, you end up playing.
So that's
scared.
How you're entering this.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I don't want to regret it, you know. I want to just go for it.
Yeah.
Have as much fun as possible. And yeah. What's the expression they say? I'm trying to think of a sports analogy. When the coach tells you just swing away, you know, like when you're in the batter's box and it's a hitter's count. So right. I'm trying to just swing away, you know, and see what happens.
Cool. So you're a firefighter. Firefighters have had success on this show in the past. I'm thinking Jeremy and stuff like that. Are you going to tell people about what you do? Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah, I'm gonna tell everybody, I think. I contemplated not telling people because I think there is at least a potential of sort of the final tribal danger of not wanting to sit next to someone who has an admirable job or something that is, you know, socially admired or something.
Right.
I think at least that could at least be somewhat of a danger. So I considered lying about what I do or trying to find a half-truth.
Yeah, what would it be?
So I'm a paramedic too, so we have paramedics on all the fire engines. So I thought about just saying I'm a paramedic. But then I felt like...
It's a similar connotation, right?
Kind of. It's close. Yeah. I feel like it's at least close. Maybe it doesn't have quite the hero stigma.
Yeah.
Although it deserves it, you know, but to some people probably it's not as, you know, it's not as, whatever. It doesn't have quite the stigma that maybe being a firefighter does. But then I thought, yeah, the risk isn't worth the reward on that one, you know, because I think it is. It's in the same line. You know, people could still use it in the same way. You know, you don't want to sit next to a paramedic.
Right.
You know, he saves lives or blah, blah, blah. You know. Right. Side note, I don't work with any firefighters that call themselves heroes. We don't do that. That's not how we feel. Certainly, it's our privilege. We love what we do.
Totally.
We certainly don't feel that way.
Yeah, but as a writer and a podcaster, like, I would never call myself a hero. That's everybody else.
That's everyone else.
Who puts that on me.
That must be hard for you.
It's hard.
I know.
You know, like, walking out and, like, having all these eyes and pressure on me.
No, please don't buy me coffee. Enough with the gifts.
Do you get stuff like that?
The posters.
Like, do people, like, you know, they really shower that on you guys?
Sometimes, yeah. You know, people, like, want to buy us. We live at the firehouse,
yeah.
So we shop and we have to cook meals and all this stuff. And people sometimes want to buy our groceries, or someone will want to buy us a beer. And we're like, we can't drink on the job,
yeah.
But I guess maybe some places. But
you win
us.
The $1 million, and everyone's gonna be like, okay, you can pay for it yourself.
Yeah, man, I remember that guy.
Tabs on Eric.
You know, but people are generous. The best thing we get, the only thing, we don't accept anything. We're not allowed to do that. But we will accept, like, cookies, or, you know, sometimes people bring us a cake,
yeah.
or like on holidays sometimes, because we work Christmas and Thanksgiving and we work all the holidays, so people drop by cookies or something, and
yeah,
we appreciate that.
So you're coming into here, you're playing light, you said, you know, you feel like you've already won back home,
yeah.
So you're free to play. So what does that look like, what are you willing to do out here? Have you already started thinking about things that you want to do out here?
Generally, I think you think about it, you know, you consider everything, you know. As a fan of the game, I certainly consider everything. But I think the closer I've gotten, you know, to launch day, the more you realize, like, you can't play until you're playing. As much as you try to in your head, there's just too many variables. You don't know the people. You don't know the tribes. You don't know the theme. You don't know, you know, the cards you're going to be dealt.
Yeah.
And so it's so hard to play when you're not playing. In fact, I've sort of given up on it, and I'm just trying to be patient and let it come to me. You know what I mean?
Like, totally.
It's hard to... I think you could almost do more harm than good trying to pre-plan too much. But I have sort of set up some like axioms to play by.
Okay,
you
let's
know,
hear them.
You know, faced with tough decisions, you know, I feel like I've got to have a filter system to, like, run them through in my own brain. And so I've got some. The first one is, I knew that if I was going to leave my boys and my wife behind for such a long period of time, it feels like a sacrifice for sure. I bet my youngest, by the way, is walking, like, right now, and I just missed it. And he's cruising around the
house. That's got to be hard.
Yeah, stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, certainly there's there's some sacrifice, at least I feel. So if I'm going to do that, the first axiom is play to win. You know, if I'm faced with a tough decision and I can clearly say, you know, this road leads to me having a better chance at winning, that's going to be my primary sort of filter. And then there are some other ones, you know, like I want to do as little harm as possible. You know, I don't want to, like, punish people in the process. Certainly feelings will get hurt and people will be upset at things.
It's just inevitable.
Yeah. But I think there are opportunities to, like, be humane about it, you know, and if I have an opportunity that won't hurt me to do that, I'll certainly take it. And I want to have fun. I want to build some real relationships. You know, I don't want to be like, I want to try to be myself as much as possible, you know, and actually have people get to know me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of really it, you know? And I want to, like, do the Jungle Boy things of my childhood dreams, you know?
Have you done anything even, like, remotely in this realm before?
I mean, I've backpacked and, you know, I've been on some, like, extended camping trips. And I mean, as a kid, you know, I pretty much lived outside. But, I mean, no. I mean, not like... I mean, I used to dream about this stuff. I used to have this recurring, like, fantasy as a kid that we would get in a plane crash.
Wow.
Me and my family. And, like, I would be, like, stranded, like, on a mountain, and I'd have to, like, survive and, you know, befriend an eagle. Catch wild game. You know, so, I mean, yeah. I mean, I got tons of, like, little things I want to do. Like, I've never spearfished. If I don't catch a fish, I'm gonna be pissed. You know, if there's something with
these fish, you're coming for them.
Yeah, they're on notice.
They're on notice.
Yeah, yeah. I've already been getting to know them. I've been, you know, dropping some food in the water every now and then. But, I mean, yeah. If something's got four legs and I can kill it, I'm gonna try. Things like that.
And if
that,
something's,
you know,
got two legs and you can blindside it, you're gonna do that too.
Yeah, I hope so. I want to snuff some torches for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's, I think, the other, like, you know, the dream of not only just winning, but, like, pulling off, like, the move of the season, you know, the big one, would be cool. That'd be a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, but, I mean, I'm a fan, so I'm pumped about all the little stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I want my buff. I want to give Jeff a hug.
Yeah, I don't know if he likes that.
I know. I don't care. Why do I? It's for me. It's not for him. This is just completely selfish. You know? The challenge is all of it.
Chapter 2, Part 3, The Ron Clark Story.
How's it going?
It's going great.
Josh.
Hey, Josh.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Yes, have a seat.
All right.
How are you feeling?
I feel awesome.
Welcome to Survivor.
Listen, I'm excited just to be doing something. Several days of quarantine.
Yeah. hold on, let me just make sure we're good. Yeah, we're set. Yeah, start there. So several days of quarantine.
Yes.
You're bored.
A little bit. I'm stir crazy.
Yeah, what's going on?
I think
you're in Ponderosa.
I think people think that when you go on Survivor, you get on a plane, you get on a boat, you go to the island, but it's not so. You have to have several days where you go through all of these procedures and safety tips and rules of the game, and so it's been 7 days of just sitting at the Ponderosa and getting ready, not knowing when at any second they could call us to say it's time.
It's happening now! Smoke bomb! You're
so,
in, right.
Yeah. So after, like, day four, you're kind of like, you know what? My adrenaline's decrease to the lowest level now. I'm going to wait and use it when I need it.
So you're just kind of, like, stirring, antsy, ready to get this thing going.
Yes, and trying to do as much in the game as I can already by trying to sum up my contestants. We're all in the same room, and so you can't talk to each other, but you can look at each other. And so just trying to figure out who they are.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah, well, we'll get into that. I've got pictures of everybody. We'll sort through them all.
Well, I'll give you the rundown.
I will get your takes for sure. First, tell me a bit about who you are, what you're doing out here, all that good stuff.
Sure. I'm a fifth grade teacher from Atlanta, Georgia. I started a school there. It's named after me, called the Ron Clark Academy. I started it when I was teaching in New York City, actually. I was named as the American Teacher of the Year. I got to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Oh, nice. How was Oprah?
I love Oprah.
Yeah.
She was great. She told me to write a book. And so, you know, when Oprah tells you to write a book,
you write a book.
So I wrote a book about 55 rules I have for my students, the Central 55. When the book came out, Oprah profiled the book on her show, and it went through the roof. It was number two in the nation behind Harry Potter for a long time.
Whoa.
And so all the money went into a foundation, and the foundation was used to start a dream, and that's the school we started in Atlanta. At the same time, they made a movie about my life story called The Ron Clark Story, and Matthew Perry, who's Chandler from Friends, played me in the movie. And so there's a lot of publicity. So the board members said, we're a nonprofit. They said, why don't we name the school the Ron Clark Academy, so people will recognize the movie and whatnot. So I don't want people to think I was arrogant enough to name the school after myself.
It was just practical.
Yeah. And so what we do is we work with all different types of kids. You know, a lot of our kids come from low-wealth families. We have kids who have learning disabilities, kids who have discipline problems, kids who are average, and kids who are gifted. But what we do, which makes our school cool, it's like Hogwarts, and it's exciting, and it's just, we have trap doors and secret passageways and fire-breathing dragons. And then we open our doors every week and allow educators from around the world to go to our school to see how we teach. So we have 600 come a week. So we've had 50,000 come so far.
Wow.
So we're creating a revolution and showing people how education should be.
How long has the school been open for?
This is our 11th year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So there's 11-year-old dragons lurking through the halls of the Ron Clark Academy.
Oh, yes, there are. Yeah, we have lots of surprises. If you
are you worried about how the dragons will behave in their adolescence? They're getting close.
Well, no, I think we've been through the growing pains of that type of thing.
Yeah. So tell me more about the school and, like, your philosophy in terms of, like,
sure.
That sounds like a very creative, playful way to learn.
Yeah.
So why does that feel like the right path?
Yeah, people see me on YouTube clips and viral videos dancing on tables, and it's all about fun and rapping with kids, and people think I'm like Willy Wonka. But remember, didn't he kill one of those girls? And so...
A few of them, I think.
Yeah. So on one hand, it is like Willy Wonka. On the other hand, I'm so strict and we have high expectations. We must be the most rigorous middle school in the world. We expect a lot of our kids because we have a dumbed-down, wussified education system in America where teachers are just, like, fed up with parents who complain all the time and test scores. So teachers have kind of wiped their hands and said, okay, just give all the kids A's and B's and people will leave us alone. If you challenge a kid and the grades drop, you're called to the principal's office because the parent's complaining, what's wrong with your methods, that my child's not having more success. And so what we do at our school is different. We find the brightest kid in the class, and that's who we teach to. And we make it so hard. But then we do it with love and passion and energy and rap and music and lights. And so the kids want to be there, and so they rise to the occasion. We have 100% graduation rate from high school.
It's amazing.
95% of our kids are now in college. It's just awesome.
What got you into this line of work, into wanting to be an educator?
Oh, Lord, I'm from the country. I'm from a small town, population 400, called Chocowinity in North Carolina. No one in my family on either side had ever been to college. I was the first one to go. And a teacher at a local school passed away, and I was working at a Dunkin' Donuts. And my mom's like, somebody's got to go teach those fifth graders because the teacher passed away, and we have a hard time getting teachers to go down to that area. And so my mom twisted my arm, and I was like, okay, crap, I guess I'll go substitute teach for a few days. And 24 years later, I am still doing it, and I love it, and I can't imagine doing anything else.
That's amazing. So how did you make the leap from that line of work to your present line of work, which is Survivor Player?
Well, the majority of my life has been spent helping children, helping others, helping teachers, giving back. And my friends and family always say, you never do anything for yourself. You never do anything for yourself. And so... I guess when I turned 46, I was like, you know, what is there something I would want to do for myself? And it's always been Survivor, but I've never done it because of the time commitment, and it's just a lot of work, and I don't want to be away from my family. But I said, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. And I went online, I applied, and I said, if it's meant to be, it'll be meant to be. And so then they called me and said, would you like to go through the interview process? And here I am.
Yeah. So you've been a Survivor guy for a while.
Oh, yeah. I watched the very first episode when I was teaching in Harlem on a little tiny black and white 16-inch TV. It's a little tiny, and I watched the first episode and fell in love, and my friends and I have been in love ever since. We watch it together every week still, and I'm just a huge fan.
What is it about the show that really speaks to you?
Oh, I'm a competitor, and Survivor is the ultimate competition. It tests you mentally, physically, socially. And so as someone who loves to compete, it's like the pinnacle of what you can do to challenge and test yourself and see what you're made of.
Yeah. So in terms of that, like, what types of players do you like? And are there types of players that you would want to emulate as you're coming out here?
You know, that's the hard part because I'm a school teacher. I love kids. I love helping people. But I tend to, when I compete, to be more of a poverty, Johnny Fairplay type of person.
A little bit of edge.
Yeah. And so, and it's a game. And so... I think when my students see me, if they see me lie and cheat and manipulate, then they know, well, part of the rules, you're allowed to do this in this particular game. So I'm just going to go for it. And so, yeah. But I think Spencer and I are probably most similarly aligned in terms of personality.
Okay, so you're like cerebral in terms of how you approach this.
And like, you know, Spencer's neurotic, and I'm a little neurotic. Like, I went in all the past games and puzzles that they've had to do. I freeze-framed them, printed them out, took pictures, had them made. I made them out of construction paper, and I have practiced all the past puzzles.
Whoa.
So if any of the puzzles that they say, hey, you've seen this in season 12 and season 26, and now we're doing it again, I know all the puzzles. I've done them all.
You've memorized them.
And so I think...
How long did that take to do?
I guess I've been working on it for 6 months.
Wow.
Just in free time and playing around. And some of them I can't do as quickly as others, like the fire... The big fire puzzle.
I've tried that stuff.
Yeah, it takes me a while, but I can do it in about 2 minutes, which it takes the average person...
2 minutes is a while.
Yeah, because it's a complicated puzzle.
Yeah.
But it takes the average person 20 minutes. And so I'm just prayerful that I will be somewhere and they'll say, oh, let's look at this puzzle from the past. I'm about to kill this.
So you're going to volunteer for puzzles?
Yes. Anything that I've seen from the past, I would definitely volunteer for that. But it's also, you had to be tricky. If it's a puzzle you've never seen, the puzzles are so hard. The first time I did the fire puzzle, it took me 18 minutes. And so it's, I don't want to volunteer for it unless I'm certain, because if you say, let me do the puzzle, and then you fail. And what I've read online is that when you have a challenge where you have to jump in the water, run down the beach, then do a puzzle, they say the jump in the water and run down the beach is 10% of the time of the challenge. The real challenge is when you get to the puzzle, and everyone ends up there, and it takes forever. And so I don't know if I want to take that on unless I'm confident. But the practice has helped me, and I'm even doing puzzles now in my notebook, just making up puzzles and working out my own puzzles.
Yeah. That's what you're doing at Ponderosa right now?
Yeah, waiting for these interviews. I'm sitting there with my pen and paper. I'm creating my own puzzles and trying to solve them. And
That's amazing. So the way that you're going to play this game, what do you think your students are going to think when they watch this? Obviously, you're not a prophet. You can't tell how this is all going to go. But if it goes according to plan, what are people back home going to think when they see you on TV?
Everybody told me to let the game come to me because I'm an aggressive person. And they said, Ron, just be patient, let the game come to you. But I'm limited when it comes to not being aggressive. I don't know how to, my whole life, I'm just a very aggressive person. I go for things. And so I'll probably go for it quick, and it will either bode well for me, it will be my downfall. But I think my students will say, you went for it, Mr. Clark, at least you went for it, either way.
Is it hard to be away from home right now? School must be wrapping up if it's not quite wrapped up already for the year.
Yeah, we just had our graduation
okay. The
Sunday before I left, and so school's pretty much done. So right now it's not hard for me because I meditated a lot before I came, and I tried to mentally prepare myself for this long experience of being away from my family. So right now I'm holding up pretty well, but come back to me when I haven't eaten in a week, and
right. Then
I've got 3 mosquito bites right now, and they're pretty bad. But when I've got 50 mosquito bites, and I mean, I might start missing home much more.
Yeah. In terms of that, who are you leaving behind? Who's rooting for you?
Yeah, my husband is back home, and that's hard because you love somebody for 18 years, and then to be away from that person is really challenging. My 2 little Chow Chow dogs, my puppies, they're gonna freak out. I'm honestly most worried about them, more so than my mom and my dad, because they won't know what to do if dad doesn't come home. And they're so loyal, they'll sit at the door. They will sit at the door until I come home. And so I'm sure right now they are sitting at that door.
39-day wait.
And I wonder how many days it'll be before they say, okay, he's not coming home. But that'll be a sad day for them. So,
yeah. You meditated on this. What were you thinking about as you were kind of just sort of visualizing what Survivor might be like?
This is going to sound corny, but when I meditate, I try to create a space that I can revisit. I know it makes me sound a little odd, but I try to remember the room, the way the bed feels, the pillow, the air, the temperature. I try to
capture some of that sense memory.
All of it. So then when I'm in a place where, like when I was on that boat coming here and the boat was so rough, I can kind of close my eyes and meditate, and I can go back to the moment on the bed. So I did a lot of that. That's helped me in life several times. And then just being strong mentally and just fortitude and just trying to draw strength from that.
Yeah. The water was tough today.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So I wasn't... Yeah, I got drenched on the boat coming over. It was like, and I was sitting there and I was like, oh gosh, this is horrible. But I did not get seasick. As soon as I stepped foot on land, I felt seasick.
You and me both. That is,
seriously?
That's exactly what happened to me today. I was fine on the boat, and then I got on land. I was like, hey.
Yeah. I was like, I cannot vomit from the other contestants because they're going to think, right. Oh, look how he's the weak one. And so I just kind of pushed through.
Oh.
But I grew up on boats. I grew up on the water, and so I didn't think I'd have a problem. But, yeah, it got to me today. It was rough.
Yeah. Oh, so you're not alone.
Chapter 2, Part 4. I wish I had a clever title, but since Victoria doesn't introduce herself, I should probably use this title space to tell you that this is an interview with Victoria.
We are in the shade. Yeah, this is the spot. It used to have walls, this tent, and I took them down.
No, nice and breezy.
I took them down because it was like baking in here. It's like, this is the wrong place to be. Nothing about this is good. This is the right place to be, though. Just Fiji, generally, I gotta imagine you must be stoked.
I'm very stoked. When Survivor first came to Fiji, before I'd even applied, I just remember saying to my dad, I was like, can we go to Fiji? It just looks real cool, real nice. So I'm so pumped that I'm here and on Survivor.
So that's great. So you're already living a dream.
I am. The minute I got here. Well, the minute I got the first email, it says, you're moving on and casting. I was on the subway when I got the email, and I literally just started screaming. And everyone was, honestly, a couple people
it's
looked
New
at
York,
me, but
right?
It's New York,
you know,
honestly, some people
we're good,
just like,
we're used to it,
she's probably fine. And then I immediately called my best friend, and I was like, wah! So I could have a reason to be screaming, so yeah, I've been living the dream since then.
Yeah, right. So tell me about that, tell me about, like, you know, wanting to get on the show. So have you been a Survivor fan for a while?
I have been a Survivor fan since I was 6, because that's when it first came
okay.
out. So I've been watching it since day one, with my family. My aunt and uncle are actually the ones to turn me and my parents onto it. And I mean, I was 6, so I guess I just watched what my parents told me.
That's how it works.
Good parenting,
yes.
Honestly. Like watching Richard Hatch walk around naked, right? Like good thing to show you're like basically infant. I've been watching it since the very beginning when I think I've told this story like 4 times today already, but, when I was, I guess, like 8 or 9, whenever season 7 came out, Pearl Islands, I asked Santa Claus for a Survivor buff. So I still believed in Santa Claus. I know I was definitely in grade school because I remember wearing it as a tube top to school because that's how the people wear it.
Sure.
Yeah. And one of the lunch ladies yelled at me and said that my shirt should have straps, so still remember.
Remember, you've got to put straps on the buff. That's for a future reference.
So, yeah, I mean, I've been loving the show since I was a little kid, and I, to this day, still love it. I wrote my college application essays about how to play Survivor, why Survivor's the greatest, and how I'm going to be on Survivor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I didn't get into that many colleges, to be honest. I was on Tinder a couple years ago, just scrolling through, as I want to do, and I found Cochran on Tinder, and I matched with him, and it was a match. And the only thing I asked him was, how do I get on Survivor? And he was... I feel like he was pretty annoyed. Like, if he could have rolled his eyes via text, I think that's what he did.
Did he give you any advice?
He did. He just said, be yourself. And I was like, ha, cool. All right, never mind. It's not that helpful. But I guess it worked. I'm here. And
yeah.
I am me, so.
And now you win, and you get to roll your eyes at him. I don't know how it works, because he's a winner as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or we could just, like, team up and be like the greatest redheads to ever live.
Yes.
The most rich,
let alone Survivor.
Yeah, ever in the whole world.
So when did you know that you wanted to be on the show? Like, when did that start for you, when you know, went from beyond just like being somebody who loved the show growing up to wanting to actually play?
I feel like I've been saying it ever since I was little. I mean, because I just remember sitting there, like, I used to love things like Buried Treasure and, like, I mean, what little kid doesn't? When I was super little, when people asked me, like, what did you want to be when you grew up? I said, an archaeologist, because I just loved the idea of, like, digging things up and, like, it being, like, a discovery. So, like, when they had, like, I think it was really Pearl Islands that, like, turned me on to wanting to be on the show, because that's where they did the whole pirate thing. Like, getting a map and, like, finding your camp and, like, you know, living outside. I feel like especially when I was in high school, I just... You know, I had the typical teen angst, and I was like, I want to get off the grid. I want to live on a farm. Like, I hate the city. And so it's just like, it's always been a dream for me to come out here and see if I could, you know, it's not a farm, but if I could really, like, subsist on
sometimes
nothing.
Sometimes there's, like, chickens and stuff,
whatever.
You know, you could make it Survivor Farm, you know?
Close enough.
Yeah.
But I actually, I looked at the application a lot of times, and then the fact that it was a video portion always stopped me, and I don't really know why exactly. Like, there's been at least 3 times that I filled out the whole written part, because I have no problem writing things. I feel like I express myself best when I'm writing, And then when it came to the video, I was just like, never mind. I just couldn't imagine, like, what I could possibly say and how to not look totally awkward and, like, super staged. And, you know, I was like, what could I possibly put in here that would make them want me? And then I was just like, eh, forget it. It's, like, a lot of work. And what are the odds, you know? But I finally actually applied last year. It really wasn't even that long ago. It was the only time I ever applied. I did, like, a 45-second video with, like, my laptop webcam of me sitting on my couch. And I literally said, like, nothing. Like, Caitlin told me, she's like, it was one of the shortest submission videos we got. And I was like, what the fuck made you pick it? Like, I was just like, maybe it's because I sounded, like, super New Yorker. I was like, I'm going to kick ass. Like, that's pretty much all
yeah,
I said.
Yeah, what did you say?
Just... I looked back when
yeah,
I... Yeah, I got this.
For 45 seconds on a loop.
Basically. I think I said something about Brains Beauty Brawn because I really liked that season. I just felt like that... It's very true. Those are the three things you need to survive out here, or do well at least. And I said something about that I got all three of those things like on lock. And I definitely said the phrase, I'm going to kick ass, and that you need to pick me, something like that. It was like so short, and I looked like a fucking moron. Like, I looked back, like when I got the email that I was moving on, I was like, what? I like looked back, I was like, what did I even say? And I found the video, and I just immediately shut my laptop. I'm like, ugh, cringe. No.
Yeah.
Awful. But hey, it got me here.
And so it worked out, because obviously here you are.
I know.
You booked the trip to Fiji.
I did, and I'm so happy about it, man. I couldn't even believe it. Like, every step of the way, like, my parents were like, can we tell people? I'm like, this was before we got, like, the non-disclosure, so I didn't actually know we couldn't tell people. I was like, no, why would you tell people? Like, it's nothing. Like, I'm on, like, the second round of cats. Nothing, guys. It's not going to be anything. I kept downplaying it. Like, the farther along I got, I was like, it's still nothing. And I'm like, I made it to the end of finals, and I haven't been cut, but I haven't been cast. And I'm like, it's still nothing.
Right.
And then when I got the phone call, I was like, it's finally not nothing. Like...
Well, it's very much not nothing now. It's a huge something. It's going to be your only thing for yeah. the next, you know, 39 days, hopefully.
Hell yeah.
What's the plan? What are you going to do? What's the game plan now that you're coming out here? And, like, just kind of, like, having watched Survivor and lived Survivor for so long and having yeah. it been so important to you, what's, like, your philosophy as you enter the game, your feeling as you enter the game?
I mean, overall, I want to be a memorable player. I don't want to be somebody who's out soon, or even if they're not out soon, like some of the people who just made it to end in this last season, I don't know, I like felt like Sebastian like hardly said a word the whole time because he was kind of boring in terms of gameplay. Like, I don't want to be like that. I want to be a someone who makes big moves, who like makes bold moves, whether it serves me well or not. Like, I just want to make sure I leave everything on the table when I'm out there, but not right off the gate. Like, I'm not gonna go in, like, guns a-blazing, like, doing stupid things, like Tony running off immediately trying to find an idol.
Oh, but it was so good.
It was so good to watch, but, like, how dumb, man. Like, just don't... And maybe when you're playing with people who've played before, they're like, all right, we could expect that of him. You have, like, an idea of that person. But we're all strangers. Like, if you go out and immediately do something stupid or brazen or you're annoying, like, you're not gonna go very far. Like, the first person who's voted off, you hardly know anyone. The only reason to vote you off is the fact that you're probably really annoying. Or you, like, super suck in the first challenge.
Right.
You know, so at the beginning, I don't really want to be a force. I want to be someone who's kind of, like, middle of the road. Like, I do well in challenges. I help around camp. But I'm not number one at anything. I don't want to put myself out there too soon, because I just feel like that's a way to get yourself noticed in a way you don't want to be. But eventually, like, once I can get a... I think it's really getting a grasp on the other people. You can't have a firm strategy going in without knowing your other tribe mates. Like, this game is not in your own hands. It's wholly in the hands of other people and how you can work with them. My main strategy is just to be adaptive. You know, I want to be able to get to know these people and, like, be on their good side publicly and then, you know, kill them when they sleep.
Chapter 2, Part 5. The Holiday, Part 2.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well, how are you?
Tell me who you are and what you're all about.
I'm Aurora McCreary. I'm 32, divorce attorney from Orlando.
Okay, cool. And you're on Survivor.
I am. I am actually on Survivor. I can't believe it.
How does that feel?
It doesn't feel real. I feel like that 15-year-old girl watching at home who it just happens to be around a lot of grass right now. It doesn't feel real. I mean, just seeing the other people, I feel like I'm one of them. I'm right with them, even though they're probably all 20 and I'm in my 30s.
That's what your read is right now.
It is. I can't believe that if I have to probably calculate, and if all of a sudden this was split between age, I'm with the older crowd.
I had a moment, I think, when I came out here for Ghost Island.
Yes.
And I'm 33, so I was 32 at the time. And I looked at the cast, and I was like, I'm like the sixth oldest person if I were on this cast.
Yeah, what do you have, like Angela?
A surprising moment.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh, they're all so young, and then they're so excited. Yes, I'm 18, I'm the youngest one. I'm not, thank you. I hit puberty, I can drink.
So tell me about yourself and who you are outside of the game. So you're a divorce lawyer.
I am a divorce lawyer. Literally, I tell people, I divorce people for an attorney. I do other, I mean, I have the nice, happy adoptions, but no, I go in court every day arguing, and I love it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing anything else. I never thought I would get into doing divorces. I thought, oh my God, people are going to be crying. They're going to want me to hold their hands. But it's the opposite. I have to stay disattached. And the fact that I don't get involved emotionally, that I don't really have to get involved in their drama and I can send to the other people, it makes me good at what I do.
That's what you have to do in order to succeed in your job, I'm sure.
You
have to be
do.
A rock, right?
You have to accept that you are not going to be able to fix the situation. And instead, take what you're hearing from them, figure out what's really the truth and what's the emotion, and then try and get them to get somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Try and get them to reality without telling them, hey, you're wrong, or you're being emotional, or you're just not seeing the picture. For me, that's why also I think I'm going to be good at this game.
I was just going to say, sounds like a totally useless skill set for a survivor.
Horrible. I mean, God, let me just sit on the quad sideline and twiddle my thumbs.
But you feel like that translates really well to what you have to do out here.
I do. I think if I played the game 10 years ago, I would have been a completely different player. I think now I know people don't like to be told they're wrong. I know that everyone comes in this with emotions, with their own ideas. And you can't just force someone to play your game and tell them they're not playing because they're not playing your way. You have to figure out how to make someone else think that their game is your game. And if you can do that, you're golden. If you've got to all of a sudden switch gears and switch strategies, you've got to be comfortable doing that without worrying, oh my gosh, is everyone at home gonna think poorly of me? Oh my gosh, are they not gonna like me? I'm gonna go home and my friends will know, oh, she probably was a little mean. She probably got in fights. Arguments is a guarantee. I don't have to go home and apologize to anyone. So I think I have a lot more ability to move around and be a little bit more ruthless in this game than most people.
So you feel pretty free coming into this?
Absolutely. I don't have kids sitting at home worrying, missing. I'm not missing anything. I have a dog. I miss it, but it's not a kid.
Right.
I don't have a job in which I'm worried that if I'm a bitch, it's going to be affecting it. If I am aggressive on this game, my job will be better. If I come out of this the same person, I have a happy life, and I don't feel like I've lost out on anything.
Cool. So who would you have been 10 years ago if you'd played?
I would have come out of here right away telling people, I know more than you do, and I'm going to play better than you are, and you're being an idiot. Yeah, that would have been me.
It wouldn't have been good.
It wouldn't have. I mean, I probably still will do that, but give me at least till, like, day 8.
Sure. Fair enough. So what got you on the track to being an attorney?
I've always wanted to be an attorney. When I was young, everyone told me, you're going to be an attorney. For me growing up, anytime anyone asked me to do something, I asked, well, what do I get? What is the reason? There has to be a reason for something. I argued for everything. I negotiated for everything. So I've always wanted to be an attorney. It's more, I thought I wanted to save the world attorney. I graduated early from college and went to Africa and did human rights law because I was going to save the world.
Yeah.
And it's definitely still one of my passions. It's definitely still something that I work with and learn about and make sure that I am involved in some sort. But I knew it wasn't something that I could dedicate my life to. I wasn't the person that can do that every day and not get emotionally involved. That's my trigger, and I can't get in it.
What, getting emotionally involved?
Getting emotionally involved. I am 100% in everything I do. Who I am as a person, 100%. I can't hide who I am. At the same point, that's me in emotions. I'm not the most emotional individual. You know, I've lost family members. I've lost my mother. I've been through things in my life, and I didn't cry through any of it. You give me a Hallmark commercial, and I'm on the ground dying. Once I start crying, it's over. Like, yeah. It's just, I'm going to cry in this game, I know. I'm going to cry plenty of times. The first time I do it, people are going to shit their pants. Because they're going to say, oh my
intense.
God, the bitch just cried.
Do me a favor, and like, when you get off the show, and like, you know that your crying episode is coming up, can you just text me so I can be wearing diapers at least when it comes
please,
on?
I will. Grab a bag of popcorn and let's go. I'll watch it together.
But you can feel that. You can sense that there will be emotion out here.
Absolutely. I think people also think that people are crying on this show because they're weak or because the elements have gotten to them. I think there's also a point where this is our dream. Most of us didn't just go on a whim and say, hey, that'd be fun, let's apply, or I want to be on TV. This is something many of us have thought about for years or tried to get on for years. So everything about it is very emotional. We think we're going to lose the game. We think we're hurting someone's feelings that at that point we're on a team with. It's very important to us. This isn't just a vacation. This is a dream.
Yeah. What was it about Survivor that reached out to you when you first started watching it and like where you were in your life at that time?
Oh, it was everything. I mean, definitely the cutthroat. I love it. I love everything about that. You have to all of a sudden make friends very quickly. That's not my strong point. And that's a struggle, but it's something that's challenging. Then the next day, oh, look, guess what? You're on all new teams, and now you hate them, and the people you just talked crap about and, like, gloated in front of, you've all of a sudden got to be friends with. But don't worry, we're also going to let you jump off of really high things in crystal blue water in the middle of the ocean, but that's just for fun. And then, hey, you know, you may starve, but...
You will.
Every day you're going to look better and better and better in that bikini, aren't you? So I just love that it challenges. There's no way to come in this game and say, I'm good at all three.
Yeah.
You inevitably are going to come in and say, this is my weak spot. And I love that everyone who does leaves it a little better in that weak spot.
Yeah.
And knows, you know what? I push my comfort zone. Whether that be physically, whether that be coming outdoors and not being so protected and sheltered, or whether it be socially. For me, it's definitely going to be social.
You think it's social?
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to revert back to high school. I feel like this game makes you do that. And in high school, you know, I was shy while also being annoyingly outgoing. I wanted everyone to be my friend, but I didn't know who I was. And so, yeah, I was an unpopular kid who was just trying to get in. And so I think I still will revert back to that. But I think as an adult and the things I've learned, I'll learn I'm totally okay with being in the out crowd, because the out crowd is who win this game. They're the people who actually make decisions. They're the people who are controlling this world.
Yeah.
So, I'm ready. Yeah.
Nice. What do you think it is in you that Survivor saw that they made, you know, made them want to bring you onto the show?
I think that they saw someone who is in tune with their aggressive, direct attitude, someone who is ready to play this game, but who also is so excited to learn who am I socially, and am I as bad as I think I am, and am I as funny as I think I am, can I still make friends? I think they wanted to give people who love this game an opportunity to not just play it, but to learn from it and to see, okay, I'm up for the challenge, not just for the game, but the challenge that comes after it.
Are you going to talk about being a lawyer? Like, are you going to hide that? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know how people ever could think I could go 39 days without saying I'm a lawyer.
I kind of agree.
What do you say? You're a paralegal in it? Yeah. I mean, that doesn't do any better. I can tell you how much paralegals make. My job is to know everyone's finances. So money is so... It's such a stupid comment for these things, let alone... People's reasoning for why I shouldn't tell people I'm a lawyer is because they, no one wants to sit next to a lawyer. No one wants to give people a lawyer a money. Cool. Then take me to the dam. Take me to the inn.
Right.
Don't take the fireman. Why are you going to take the stay-at-home mom? Why are you going to take the priest? Why are you going to take the person who volunteers for homeless children? Take me. People will hate me, but they'll respect how I play the game. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure just in this, no one thinks I'm like a kindergarten teacher or a veterinarian. I mean, my attitude comes off as she's a lawyer or something in a profession field where she's in charge.
So you're going to be open with it?
Yeah, I'm open. I'm gay. I'm a lawyer. I came from the foster care system. It's all open. I'm an open book, and yeah. I'm going to cry. So, wide open.
You're going to cry. What's the tattoo on your forearm?
The tattoo is in memory of the shooting at Pulse. I live in Orlando, so obviously everyone... basically had some sort of connection to it, and after a few days after was really thinking about it and was with friends, and we just all decided we wanted to go get something in memory. It was a big deal for me to get a visible tattoo. I have other tattoos, but they're hidden.
Yeah.
But I wanted something to look at every day, not just to remember what happened, but also to remember the support that not only came from the city of Orlando, but the entire world.
Yeah.
And also that, you know, you can see these things on TV, but when it really happens in your town, in your city, to your friends, to your people, you can't help but live every day. I mean, what I did next was I'm here on Survivor because you can't let go of opportunities. You don't know what's going to pass you. And why not continue to build relationships with other people who you normally wouldn't? Because it's the only way our world's going
to
get better.
Yeah. Did that, like, help galvanize you to come out for an experience like this?
It definitely did. It definitely made me say, you know what? You've done everything. You've done things that are right. You've done things by the book. But now it's time for you to live your life. You know, I've been out since I was young. But I still, you know... played by the rules. I wasn't, you know, gallivanting all around. I wasn't trying to make a stir of things, you know, and I did that with my own life as well. I went to the school I needed to. I did all the things. I bought a house. And now I'm 32, drop everything I need to, and go take a 6-week adventure with 20-year-olds. Let's do it.
Why not?
Yeah.
Right?
Screw it.
You only live once.
Right? And, I mean, this is heaven. I mean, I still don't want to lose, but if I lose, this is still such an experience.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone needs a break. And why is it only that other countries gets to take holidays? This is my holiday.
Yeah.
Let's go on a holiday.
Chapter 2, Part 6, The Honeymoon.
How's it going? How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing okay. I'm Josh.
Nice to meet you. I know who you are.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that's what I just told Dalton.
I'm oh, nice.
Super fans.
Oh, yeah. Sweet. Cool. So, who are you?
Gavin Whitson.
Gavin.
Yes, sir.
Gavin, a pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So, you're excited then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was creeping on your Instagram like right before I came out. You were posting all the Ghost Island stuff.
There was some of that. You probably saw some cat pics. I assume that'll happen.
I was more focused on the Ghost Island.
Yeah, probably a fair bit. The cat's all right, but the Ghost Island stuff is
really
cool.
Yes, I'm definitely.
Also, because you're looking at where you're about to be.
Exactly. First time out of the country. This is like my second time ever flying.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So. Was the first time going to L.A. for all the
Well,
the
first time was to Disney World. And then I'm considering all of this like one big trip.
You're doing finals. This backwards.
Yes, exactly.
So Disney World is what comes after
we'll
you win the million,
Disneyland
right?
after we win the million. Because I'll already be in Los Angeles.
Got it,
you know,
got
so
it.
It's right through there.
Makes sense. Yeah. All right, so Gavin, tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm 23 years old. I'm from a very small town called Irwin, Tennessee. It's up in the Upper East region, about 2 hours outside of where Michael was from. He's
oh,
from
cool.
Knoxville. And I'm a YMCA program director there. And what I just told these other guys is, like, the biggest thing that happened for me here recently was I just got married 2 days before flying out here.
What?
Yes, just got married 2 days before. And I was supposed to get married yesterday. And they called me and they're like, "You're on." And I was like, "Well, we've got to change this wedding around or else I'm not going to be able to play." So I got married 2 days before. It was chaos. You know, the time that I should have been training for Survivor, swimming, making fire, I'm planning a wedding, I'm moving couches into houses. So I had a very unorthodox training session before, but I am married. So,
holy crap.
Yeah, I've got a very good wife. You know, if that tells anything, if she let me come out here 2 days
after
I got married, so I'm a lucky man.
Amazing, amazing human being.
Exactly.
So that's incredible. Mazel tov, as my people like to say. Congratulations. That's fantastic. Is it tough to be out here?
It's very tough.
This is like the collision of like your greatest dream colliding so that you can't like maybe fully be present for either.
It's both dreams hitting each other, and the only way I can fulfill them both right now is to make it to that family visit and get her out here with me as well, because you know, we got to spend 2 days in our brand new home together, and now she's back at home, which, you know, that hurts me knowing that I left. It was something selfish, but she knows that this has been a dream of mine, like, and she knows how invested I am.
Yeah.
She gets buffs for me for Valentine's Day. Like, she's a winner.
Yeah,
but,
for sure.
Yeah, it does suck. I'm kind of on a honeymoon by myself right now, and she might be partying at home thinking I finally got him out of the house for 39 days.
Right. But so tell me about her. What's her name?
Her name's Carly, and she's 21, and she's amazing. You know, she's my best friend. I was talking to the producers, and we've been together for 4 years now. And I said the Survivor gods were looking out for me because we got married now on the day we started dating 4 years ago.
Wow.
You know, that wouldn't have happened otherwise. So I said, someone's looking out for us. But she's great, and right now I'm just hoping I can get her out here. You know, obviously I'm here to win this game, but goal number two right behind that is to get her out here to experience what I'm experiencing right now, because like it's both of our dreams.
Is she a Survivor fan?
Oh, yeah, she's a Survivor fan. I don't know if she was before we started dating, but she's sitting there every Wednesday. Yeah, she's sitting there every Wednesday watching now.
And so you are a lifelong Survivor fan?
Yes, as far as I can remember. I think my grandparents got me into it, but I'm a diehard, you know. If I wasn't there watching season one, I've watched it on Hulu 3 times since, you know, so I've seen them all.
So what is it about the show that really speaks to you and made you want to come out here and do this?
I'm not Mr. Survival, so that's a great question. Even though I'm from the backwoods in Tennessee, I prefer being inside.
Yeah, you like AC.
Exactly.
You're happy that we're in a shady spot
right now. I was out in the sun earlier. I was dying. But it's just seeing what you've got, like what you're made of. Whenever you're stripped of everything, I want to be able to say that, you know, I've got what it takes because I believe I do. I was raised to think that I do, so this is going to put me to the test. I'm excited.
So what do you think is going to happen out here in terms of you're going to hit boots on the ground, you're going to be playing Survivor, like what are you going to be bringing to the game?
I'm playing Survivor as soon as my boots, no pun intended, hit the ground. But I'm not going to come out here and play a super fan like Jacob did in season 36. I'm not going to be hunting for idols first thing. I need to start building relationships. You got to take this game different phases at a time. I'll worry about idols whenever I actually need to worry about them. I'm not the most physical player. There's some people out here that look like they're carved out of marble. You know, there's some bigger guys. But I can hang with the best of them. You know, I'm not going to get pushed around. So I'm not worried about being a weak person who's typically voted off when one of those first votes.
Do you feel athletic enough to hang in there and everything?
Yeah, I can hang with the best of them. As long as there's no professional athletes, you know.
Right.
No Olympians, but your average Joe, I can hang with the best.
Cool. I'm still so hung up on the fact that you got married 2 days before you came out here.
And you notice I'm not wearing a ring.
Right.
That's because I plan on losing a heck of a lot of weight in the next 39 days.
Yes.
She's probably not willing to buy another ring. I know I wouldn't be if she lost hers.
So when I got married, I don't have my ring on either because I'm very paranoid about it. So I was so happy. It was like the best day of my life.
It was. The best day of my life. And, you know, being out here is great, but nothing's going to top that day for me.
Never.
This is going to be number two.
Yeah.
You know, maybe having a firstborn child will be number three.
I don't know yet. I have no idea. I can say that the wedding was the best. And, like, the next day, I was, like, showering, and I had the ring on. I'm not a jewelry guy, yeah, and, like, life is all good. And, like, I'm just, like, thinking about how happy I am, and I'm, like, washing my hair. And suddenly, like, my ring falls off my finger and almost falls down the drain. Like, ever since, like, no water activity, stay away. So, smart move.
Whenever I'm out here taking a shower in the ocean, that's the last thing I would have wanted.
You know, like, it's just a terrifying thought. Yeah. Like, to lose your ring on Survivor, like, especially in your case, the Omen, would be deadly.
Aqua dump.
That would be a bad place to lose your wedding ring. How was the wedding? Tell me about the day.
It was beautiful. Everything, you know, we had to change venues, which neither of us were happy with. You know, we had our hearts set on this.
How quickly did you have to, like, change all of this?
Like that. It was a month ago.
Jeez.
Yeah, and we had this venue booked for 18 months in advance. We had everything planned. We done had the invitations sent out. Like, everything was ready. And then, like, obviously no one knows where I'm at right now, so everyone thinks I'm on a work trip, so... Her friends are probably cussing me for all I'm worth, because who moves their wedding for a work trip?
Right.
So hopefully they'll understand one day, and if not...
It's a work trip, right? Is this not a business trip?
I said still a business trip. That's what I was telling one of the producers. I'm not on vacation. But, you know, if they're still mad, then hopefully that $1 million she can take them all shopping. That's the least they deserve for all the trouble they've went through.
Totally.
Yeah, it's been an insane past couple weeks, and that's what I was... telling Carly before I left, you know, like, my family, I'm super close with my family, and at the beginning of each year we always put our New Year's resolutions on a board, and mine was to get the CEO job of the YMCA, which I haven't got yet, so hopefully I'll work up to that, find a house, I bought a house, and get on Survivor. My mom and Carly both talked to me like a dog for putting Get on Survivor. They're like, put something realistic on there, please, just so you can get them. And, you know, if I say, well, I got two out of the three right, who the heck is going to think that it was Get on Survivor and buy a house instead of getting a new job? So, it's insane.
You're in, like, full-on pinch-me territory.
Oh, exactly. Like, none of this seems real. Like, it won't seem real sitting at home watching it, you know, a couple months
Life isn't going to be real for you for, like, a solid, like, year and a half,
exactly.
I feel like.
It's insane. But I'm ready to play this game, but I'm also ready to get home to... make the memories that I'm missing now with my wife. Hopefully we'll have a little extra money to go on a honeymoon.
Are you going
to
tell people about, you know, all of this story, or are you going to keep it close to the vest?
I'm keeping it close to the vest. I don't plan on telling that anytime soon. I'm going to tell I'm married, you know, I'm not hiding that or anything like that, but I think someone might see that as a sob story if I come in saying, oh, I just got married 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So that might be one for the final right. jury. But or the final tribal council. But otherwise, you know, that's staying with me, even though worries me a little bit, her coming out here for the family visit, because she's like, I'm telling everyone. She's like, they better pick us, you know, because you never want to win or the family visit.
No, it's typically a bad idea. But the thing that, you know, that used to be my philosophy on it, but in talking to a lot of people who have played, what I have heard is you get to that moment, and like, you know, cerebrally, like, you objectively understand that, but emotion takes over.
And I'll probably be the same way, but right now, and I even told her that, and she's like, no, you better win, but we'll see how it goes.
So you've done, like, a lot of, like, studying and thinking about the game, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, so, like, what are, like, your takeaways on Survivor?
Before I even knew I was going to be on Survivor, I studied the game. Like, I would be in the shower, and I would envision myself in the game. Like, I have... the Ancient Voices song on a CD in my Jeep. Like, I'm just a Survivor freak. But it's just... the way I look at it is, and that's what I told the producers, I think whoever's going to win this season is the person who's got the fullest heart and who's willing to do the most with this game. Like, doesn't matter what you need to do. You got to make those moves. You've got to hurt people. And... you know, like I told them, I'm a Christian, and that's not going to get in the way. I can separate church from Survivor.
Yes.
And, you know, I'll still pray before every meal, pray before every challenge, because I want to know that I'm being helped out in that way, because that's what I believe, like, wholeheartedly.
Yep.
But I still, on the back end, I was put here for a reason, and that reason's to win this game. So I'm going to have no remorse. Yeah, no remorse.
I still can't get over the fact that you got married 2 days before you came out here.
I hope you get to meet her, hopefully.
That's got to be the craziest thing. Yes.
It's insane, but I miss her.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to be here.
Is that fuel?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. And that's, like, in my backpack right now. And I didn't use it as my emotional item just because I didn't want to damage it. But, like, we wrote our own vows to each other. So I've got those vows. Like, I've been in my tent.
What,
like,
did you say?
What did I say?
Yeah.
I told her. What did I tell her? I told her I was going to unclog the drain even though I didn't have long hair. You know, I tried giving a little funny stuff because I don't want to get emotional in the moment. But, you know, I also told her, like, I'm her number one fan. You know, I'm always there for her. And it was funny because she said the exact same thing for me. Whenever she talked to me, she said she was always going to be my number one fan. And, you know, me and her both knew what that meant.
Yeah.
But no one else out there knew. But it's just like we've got each other's back. Like, that's my person. And the same for her. Like, she knows that she's got me and I've got her.
Yeah. Oh, my God, everyone's going to want me asking you about strategy stuff, but I just want to ask about your marriage and everything. What a happy story.
I can still tell you my strategy real quick.
Yeah,
if you
please
want to.
Do. Please right, do.
So my strategy going into this game, and this is what I think was a selling point to Jeff and casting CBS. I told them, imagine a season 18 JT, not to be confused with his other two seasons, but the good old JT, that good old
OG JT.
Yes. That good old country boy, heavy on the southern charm, just everyone likes. But take that and then bring in like a Stephen Fishback brain to go along with it.
Oh, so merge the two guys.
Exactly, and you've got one superhuman, and that's me. You know, you're welcome. You're getting to witness him first. No,
I'm excited.
And that's what I said is, sorry about that.
Yeah.
That's what I said is I'm excited because just the way I talk, you know, take Donathan, for example, take Keith and Wes Nail. All these people really didn't have a strategic bone in their body, and I can act the same way. I can act like I don't know who Jeff is. But deep down, you know, I'm always going to be turning these numbers. I'm going to be doing whatever I need to in order to further myself.
Yeah.
So that's my strategy.
And you plan on playing that up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, playing the super fan up?
No, playing up the fact that you're not and, like, playing into, like, whatever, you know, perceived type.
Exactly. If they think I'm just the dumb hick, then I'm going to be the dumb hick for as long as I need to be.
Chapter 2, Part 7, The Journey Before the Journey.
This is the shaded den. I think this
camp.
This is my camp.
At least it's shaded.
This is my spot. Nice. Yes. Oh, God, yeah. Are you, like, sweltering out there?
Yeah.
Get used to it.
The last one I was right in the sun. I was like, whoa.
Get used to it. Oh, my God. Are you getting used to it? Are you getting used to being on Survivor?
Yes, I'm loving it. You know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I'm embracing everything, even the bug bites and the sun, the scorching sun.
Of which there are many.
I think they like melanin, because I have significantly more bug bites than anyone else here. I know it.
Yeah, I used to, when I would come out here, I would wear, like, flip-flops to these interviews, uh-huh. And now I'm wearing, like, full robot boot, because...
Oh, my God!
Because they used to...
up to his ankles.
Yeah, they're really high up, guys. But they would eat my feet, and, like, it's no good, so I'm trying to protect
those
myself.
Those are the most itchy ones, too, on my feet, so yes. you're onto something.
I feel like I am.
You're
it's just
onto
like a hot tip for future Survivor players. Come on to the show with robot feet. All right, so that's one way to start a podcast.
Right.
So tell me who you are and what you're doing out here.
So my name is Julia Carter. I'm 25 years old. I'm from Hazleton, Pennsylvania. I currently live in the Washington, D.C. area. I'm working as a medical assistant before beginning medical school this fall.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
What got you into that line of work?
So I actually lost my father when I was young, I was 7 years old, to heart disease, which disproportionately kills African-American men. So that was my primary motivation for wanting to pursue medicine. I was the first in my family to graduate college and, you know, the first in my immediate and extended family to be going on to professional school. So I'll be going to Rutgers University on full scholarship for my medical school
education.
Oh,
amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. So he's my primary motivation behind that. Anyone that I can help prevent, you know, dying prematurely is definitely something I plan on doing.
I'm really sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
It sounds like you're, you know, channeling his memory in this very positive way.
Absolutely. You have to. You know, you have to let the bad experiences and things you go through that are negative, you know, come out on the right side and use it to do something positive and really change the course. So I definitely could have succumbed to my environment and the cards that were dealt for me, but I didn't. And I wanted to do something positive and really change
change the world. So
yeah. All right. Well, you're on a brief break from that journey of positivity to do like some serious negativity and like put some bad juju out into the world. So tell me about you and Survivor and what got you out here.
So it's crazy because everyone sees it as obviously it's this very challenging mental, emotional, and physical journey. But for me, Survivor actually aired the spring after my father's passing. And I watched it growing up literally as an escape, like to help me escape what I was going through. And it was often there, giving me hope in times where I felt hopeless. So Survivor and my relationship is definitely on a deeper level, personal level. Obviously there's the game and $1 million on the line and I'm ready to come out here and play. But
just what it represents.
What it represents for me is a lot deeper. And I think that motivation and that connection for me is going to be of my benefit in this game. I think when you have that desire and that pure heart, that motivation outside of the game to be here and to really find what your purpose is for being here, that supersedes anything, and that allows you to go beyond any type of pain or trauma you're feeling out on the Fiji beaches, to really get to the end and win this game. So I'm really excited.
So, growing up with Survivor in a really big way, with that being such a huge part of your life, what does it like feel like to be here? To be in this oddly shaded spot in the middle of the Fijian jungle with bug bites and all.
I literally have to scratch myself at these bug bites to wake myself up because it oftentimes feels like I'm having an out of body experience because I'm like, holy cow, I'm really on, Survivor. Who gets to say that? There's a very select group of people that get to go through this experience and I'm one of them, and who am I? I'm just regular me. And it's just mind blowing. Like Jeff said, there's no shortage of people who want to be on this show, but there is of people that we want to see play this game. And I'm honored. Like it is literally a privilege for me to be here in the seat of who people watching at home would die to be here. So I'm not looking to squander this, this experience. And I'm definitely living in the moment and ready to, seize everything that it has coming for me, even all the negative. Yeah. So
what does that mean that you're not going to squander it? Like, how are you approaching the game? Like coming into this, you've had a lot of time to think about what it would be like if you were on Survivor.
So, as a super fan and somebody that really loves this game, squandering it is coming out here and not playing. And I don't mean by going home or simply not, giving any effort. I mean by just coming out here and just literally riding coattails, not really here to play the game. That's a spot that somebody at home that is, has been trying to apply and get on the show for 10 years would never do. And it's that really brings it home for me that I'm in literally a privileged spot to be here. It could have easily been the person next to me, the person in line, in the very long line of applicants. And I'm not here to not play the game. I'm not here to sit on the beach and get a tan. I already have one, and just ride the strong player's coattails to the end. And that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to win. I'm here to make big moves and really change the game. So,
yeah. Have you thought about ways in which you would change the game? Like, are there, things that we haven't seen on Survivor before that, you're fantasizing about bringing to this?
Let me think. I don't really know. I think just... I'm trying to think, has there been a black female winner?
One,
I think. So, obviously, that would be something that hopefully we can make a little more common.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I'm with you.
But I just really love Survivor because there's a story for everyone. Everyone watching and that is a fan can see themselves in some way in someone or some of the players out there. And I think that that matters and diversity representation matters. Me being here as a black woman is a game changer in and of itself because there's not many people who look like me who play this game.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad to see it evolving and really becoming you know, all-inclusive, gender, race, and sexual orientation diverse. So that means a lot to me, and I'm ready to be a game changer in that regard, to really be a representation.
Yeah. What do you think it is that Jeff and company saw in you? You know, like you said, so many people, such a long line of people who applied, and they want you to be the person that they're watching.
They say it's my smile. You know, you guys can't see it, but they say it's that. But no, they said that I was very charming, and my story and my personal connection to Survivor makes me somebody that they would like to see play the game, which obviously I don't disagree with in any way. It means a lot for me to be out here, and I definitely am not. I'm so grateful to be here in this position. And just honestly, I think they see a good player, somebody that could really be entertaining to watch, but I always say that there's a reason for everything. Everything happens for a reason, and for some reason I'm on Survivor. Obviously, beyond playing the game and winning $1 million, hopefully, there's a greater purpose here. I don't know whether it's to tell my story and inspire somebody, whether it's to be in the Survivor evolution in the game itself, or if it's simply to be my last hoorah before medical school. Maybe all three, but I do know that I'm very excited to figure out what that purpose is, and you guys are going to watch and figure it out with me, and hopefully at the end of it, it's a check with $1 million made out to my name.
I feel like Survivor is like, it's kind of good prep for med school in a way I would expect, because like, much like in Survivor, when you get to med school, you're not going to be able to do anything else. Like, you're going to be
drown.
Living, yeah, you're going to be living only in that world.
Drown and starve.
But I mean, like, it's just exciting on that level too, where you know that after this, no matter what happens out here, you're embarking on
another journey.
Yeah,
exactly. And this is,
it's like the journey before the journey.
Exactly. And maybe that, you know, that's obviously a huge part of it for me too, because I said, had this happened at any other time in my life, it probably wouldn't have been possible. I've been in school for the last 6 years, getting my bachelor's and my master's degree. I'm about to go on this 4-year journey of medical school, in which leaving for 39 days wouldn't have been possible. So the fact that it hit me in this time, where it just so aligns right before this next journey, is destiny. And that's why I say everything happens for a reason, and I'm supposed to be here. And I'm so excited that this is like a journey before the big journey, like you say, that is the rest of my life. So I'm ecstatic. I can't wait.
Julia, Gavin, Aurora, Victoria, Ron, Eric, Julie. 7 newbies fighting alongside the season likes of Joey Amazing and Aubrey Bracco. And that's just one half of the Edge of Extinction equation, at least as far as the players are concerned. Next time, in our final chapter, First One Out presents the Kama Tribe's rivals over at Manu Beach. First One Out presents The People vs. Extinction, a Survivor Season 38 cast preview. It's a podcast written, produced, and hosted by Josh Wigler. That's me. And it's a collaboration between The Hollywood Reporter and Rob Has a Podcast. Taryn Armstrong is our editor. He's also a robot. Music for this season comes from Moonrock, the electronic duo known in the real world as Paul Koch and Scott Sapkariu. Listen to their full debut album, Death of a Spaceman, at thisismoonrock.com. Check out the video version of this podcast on the Rob Has a Podcast YouTube channel. Follow me on social media, at Round Howard, and head to thr.com/survivor for more in the lead up to The Edge of Extinction, premiering February 20th.